Alrighty, hour number three of our radio program, and this is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network, the day after Selection Sunday. So let the Monday March Madness begin, as this is when everyone parachutes into the college basketball world. If you have not been following college basketball all throughout the season, as it is bracket, 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 and more bracket talk, as you do have your four number one seeds in Auburn and Duke and Florida and Houston, and we will see who finds the way to get to San Antonio and be the four teams remaining, and we'll see who will be cutting down the nets. Obviously, coming off conference tournament weekend, you did see a lot of people start to love Florida nationally, even though they've been highly ranked for most of the year, and especially the last 2 months, but a lot of people are now talking about Florida or Duke. I feel like it's a decision between a lot of people that they're making to see who gets not only to the NCAA championship game, but who will be cutting down the nets and be having one shining moment playing. People are down in Auburn, so I'll be curious to see what the response is from Auburn, even though they are the number one overall seed. A lot of people starting to go Michigan State out of that south. I look at the Midwest region, as we did discuss earlier. Houston's road, if you know they could avoid Gonzaga in the second round, but even if Gonzaga does get there, that's going to be a tough matchup, but I think a lot of people are on Houston as well, and there's a lot of attention on Rick Pitino entering this NCAA tournament, and also Duke as well. But let's go out to the guest line right now and welcome in the most energetic voice when it comes to covering the NCAA tournament. I know that he loves his jobs with Fox and also with Peacock, but when I was watching the Selection Sunday show the other night, I was saying he needed to be on the desk with CBS, and that is from Fox Sports, NBC, Field of 68, the great John Fanta. John, how are you?
Zach, here we go. Buckle up, because the madness is here. And I feel like it's so fascinating in this sport, because you have this epic tournament that just produces moments like no other. Then I found myself in recent years, we're talking in April, because then there's another form of yes, chaos in this sport as well. The point is, you buckle in here, because now we are 72 hours away, less than that, from what I think is still the greatest event in American sports. There's just nothing that delivers the thrill like those first 2 days of March Madness.
Well, let's start with UNC. How irate are you that UNC got in?
So, I'm not irate. I'm disappointed in the committee. I'm disappointed. And if I were an Ohio State or an Indiana or a West Virginia, I'd be disappointed as well. Or a Boise State, I'd be disappointed as well. Because your message is to play people. Your message is that if you beat those people, you get rewarded. And there's just not a lot that makes sense at all with picking North Carolina as an at-large in this field. Not when West Virginia proved that they could play without Tucker DeVries, beat Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse. Now, has Kansas had as good of a year as one would have thought? No. But they're still a 7 seed. Beat Iowa State. Iowa State's been one of the best teams in the country. Over the last month, has not played their best basketball. But the results are supposed to matter. Beat Arizona on a neutral. Beat Gonzaga on a neutral. They have an All-American in Javon Small. Why were the Mountaineers left out of this field? And instead, a team that played in a conference that was only fifth in the country because of Duke, and I guess I'll say Clemson. But Zach, make it make sense. Where Louisville had the season that they had, and they're involved in an 8-9 game.
Yeah.
If you had said that coming in, how would you have ever put Carolina in the field? They have one high major win. One high major win.
But you know what? It's the name recognition, and it's the fact they're blue blood, right? That's the way I looked at it.
And it's the fact that you as the committee, and don't get me wrong, I love Dan Gavitt. I really, Dan is a friend. He is a friend. And David Warlock, who runs the media side, is a friend. And like a lot of friends in college sports, Zach. You and I both have them.
Sure.
But we are paid to talk about these things to the people that are tuning into your show. And I think it is the definition of BS when it is said that Bubba Cunningham is not involved in any discussions in the room. Because America, we're not dumb. And we know that any business or Fortune 500 company or association, the real deals get done when the meeting isn't happening in the room.
It's a good point.
The real deals get done at the state dinner or at the continental breakfast at the four-star, five-star hotel. So I just do not subscribe to any idea that that was right. And you knew that they were embarrassed when Cunningham showed up with Gil on the screen during that selection show. That was the biggest form of confirmation that they knew that this was going to be questioned. Zach, if you knew it was going to get scrutinized, if it looked wrong, smelled wrong, tasted bad, why did you still do it? You did it to do that guy a favor and to do the ACC a favor, and it was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. And I do not get worked up about snubs. Because in my opinion, the tournament's fine at 68. I would not expand it, and this shows it. These other teams that are on the outside looking in, okay, not going to get that worked up. But I do have a bone to pick with North Carolina getting in over a team like West Virginia, over a team like Indiana, who won at Michigan State, beat Purdue. When are we going to value results? Because clearly, the metrics are a moving target. I'm done saying they have a net of this, so now they're in. It ain't true.
John Fanta here with us. I know that you mentioned Louisville in that. And you could tell Pat Kelsey, who wears his emotions on his sleeves, that was the first thing I noticed during that selection show early. He was not happy with that seed line, and I get it. But out of all these matchups in the round of 64, I think Louisville-Creighton, to me, is the most intriguing one in that 8-9 game.
Yeah, I think next to probably Arkansas and Kansas for the personalities on the sidelines. But Louisville-Creighton's fascinating because Louisville's tempo-based, highly explosive offense. Chucky Hepburn's had an All-American season. And they're dangerous with Terrence Edwards as well. Brings NCAA tournament experience. And oh, by the way, Rain Smith. This point guard matchup is efficiency personified. Rain Smith versus Steven Ashworth. Two all-out contenders who have unlimited motors and are so composed and calm, cool, and collected. I am pumped to watch the point guard showdown. On the interior, that's the question of the game. Will James Scott be able to hang in with Ryan Kalkbrenner? And for Creighton, defensively, they're going to try to shut Louisville down from beyond the arc. Louisville, they've been very successful from three, and they can get hot in a hurry. They're going to try to say, let's take away the three-point line. Let's make their guards drive it towards the middle, and we've got the best rim protector in America in Ryan Kalkbrenner. So the dynamic there of the matchup, how about Greg McDermott, the job that he's done with a team that lost Pop Isaacs, they figure out a way to keep winning, and now you have Louisville back in the tournament for the first time in 6 years. How do they handle Lexington? You know, how do they handle that stage? I think there's pressure when you're close to home in that first tournament game. Whereas if you're Creighton, you're going in, you just played a road game at St. John's on Saturday night. Once you heard that roar inside Madison Square Garden, you're really not fazed by a whole lot. I'm very curious to see how that matchup goes. I think the key for Creighton is can they get enough supplemental shot making from Jemiah Neal, Isaac Trout, and Jax McAndrew? And the key for Louisville is don't let this frenetic pace that you sometimes play with get away from settling down and taking the right shots. And don't get frustrated by having to go up against Ryan Kalkbrenner.
John Fanta, let me stay in the South there since while we're on it. Auburn, they got the number one overall seed, so it's weird to say that a team seeded number one overall and they're getting disrespected. I know they've lost three out of the last four, but I've done it as well, where if you had asked me a month, 2 months ago, you know, who's going to go to the national championship game, I'd probably say, oh, it's Auburn and Duke. Now I look at that South, and I think that's where potentially the chaos could go, because I think many of us are now deferring to Michigan State. I even circled them as well. And I can't say I feel all that strong about Auburn, and I can't say I feel all that strong about Michigan State.
No, I think that there can be an openness here. This could be the region of chaos. And you know, it's interesting because you got North Carolina, San Diego State, and while I'm on the point, Zach, I'm going to say this. How a team performs in the NCAA tournament does not impact whether or not they should have been in the field or not, right? It's a new season. Anything can happen in this thing. Michigan State, to me, though, is as battle-tested, and they are as adaptable in a game as anybody in the country. So what I mean by that is they could play any game. They could play in the 80s. They could play in the 50s. They handle things defensively very well. They guard at all five positions. They make you work for everything you're going to get. And Jace Richardson has developed into this alpha. I like their draw. You know, I think Marquette can be dangerous. Anytime you know that there's an All-American and Cam Jones on the other side, obviously that's a challenge. But for Marquette, they're a team that's built to defend. I don't think they've defended great the last month of the season. New Mexico can give Marquette problems. First off, problems defensively, because how are you going to stop Donovan Dent and Nelly Jr. Joseph, Zach, where Marquette doesn't really have a true five-man? They've played smaller all year. Nelly could cause some problems there on the interior. But you're right. I mean, do I trust Texas A&M? Zach, I don't. I don't trust them offensively to win four games and make the Final Four. Do I trust Michigan? I do. But they got paired up with the 30-win team that's a trendy upset pick, even though it's really not an upset, in UC San Diego. And you know what UC San Diego does as well as anybody? Turn you over. What's Michigan's flaw? Turnovers. So this is an open South region. I have Michigan State coming out of it because I think that they are such a tough team that doesn't rely on one or two pieces, but they truly, between Trey Holloman and Cohen Carr and the evolution of Jackson Kohler inside, that's a big key to this whole operation because we were walking into it, we're like, are they really going to get center play consistently? Kohler's finally turned the corner, and I think Tom Izzo in his 30th year has a prime setup here to be Mr. March, if not Mr. April.
John Fanta here with us. Going to the right side, the East and the Midwest, I would be very disappointed, and I'm looking at the roads here, of Duke and Houston if we don't see them in the Final Four in San Antonio, especially Houston. I know the second round, that could get a little bit funky if you do see Gonzaga, just with the job that Mark Few has done. Tennessee's a good team, but they don't scare me when I look at this. Do you feel the same way when you look at the roads for Duke and Houston to get to San Antonio?
You know, the trendy pick is Gonzaga to knock off Houston by some people. What people fail to realize is that Gonzaga still has to go through a Georgia team that I think is better than people give them credit for and has a stud in Asa Newell, who's a top 10 pick, Blue Kane and Silas Demery. And Zach, we've learned to know this in the NCAA tournament. When everybody's on a team, that opponent sees it all week long, hears about it all week long. And I still think Gonzaga will win that game. But if you can suffocate Ryan Nembhard and make his life difficult, that's the head of the snake. That should be the priority. Why do people think Houston can't do that? Doesn't that play right into the cards there? You know, I think name plays a part, but man, that streak of nine Sweet 16s, I think it ends here, and I think Houston does prevail. Duke, to me, has the easiest path to a Final Four. Mississippi State, really good defensive team. Josh Hubbard's a stud. I don't trust them enough on the offensive end of the floor. You're going to have to be elite offensively to beat Duke because of the way they guard. Baylor, actually a good offensive team. You know, I think Edgecombe's had a nice year. Norchad Omier is a really strong player, but they don't guard. And if you're not going to match Duke's defensive intensity, if you're not going to guard Tyrese Proctor and you're not going to guard Konkanipple, by the time it's said and done, remember Dante DiVincenzo, 2018 National Championship game? Konkanipple could be the DiVincenzo figure of this tournament and have one of those games that makes you say, wow, I knew he was a lottery pick, but damn, you know, maybe it's more than that. They're not going to lose Mississippi State or Baylor. Zach, Arizona's all over the place. Tommy Lloyd has not shown he can win in the tournament. Oregon's a bit dangerous, but they don't have the firepower offensively. You know, unless Jackson Shellstead or Keyshawn Barthelemy have a terrific run. And look, Oregon's in danger because Liberty's dangerous.
Sure.
Richie McKay is the 12 seed there is interesting. The matchup in the East that I'm most intrigued about is BYU-VCU.
Hmm. BYU's a good team.
Really good team. And you know what? They're peaking at the right time. They've won 9 of 10. Richie Saunders is a stud. They have a Swiss Army knife defensively with Moat Mag. And Yegor Demin, I think, if you're a basketball junkie, watch Yegor Demin play. He's really interesting as a prospect from an upside standpoint. And Kevin Young runs really good stuff. But VCU is a pressure team that defends, top 25 defense. And Max Shulga's a stud. Shulga is a stud. So I thought VCU got a tough draw there. You know, out of the one bid Atlantic 10, that's a league that really has to look in the mirror and try to figure out a way to get more teams.
In the West, and I hate to go chalk here, but I want to see Florida. I want to see St. John's. Now, obviously, if you make me pick between Bill Self and Calipari, I think Self's the better coach, but I'd rather see Patino obviously up against Calipari. But that's another one. I know St. John's, right? Their defense, unbelievable. We saw the run that they went on Friday night. Up against Marquette in a game they were down 24-9 and just how they take over that game. They're streaky shooting the ball, but I think their offense is better than what some of the stats say. If we don't see Florida and St. John's in the Elite Eight for a trip to go to San Antonio, I think I'd be disappointed when I look at the West.
Well, I don't disagree with you. However, I do think there's a really dangerous team if they can win their first round game. I think either one of them. Maryland, Memphis, if we get that in the second round, which chances are we won't. Because 12-13, you figure one of them wins. But, Zach, if we get that game, that's a Sweet 16 game in the round of 32. It would be a phenomenal basketball game. Because you're talking about the firepower of Memphis' backcourt, Dane Danger inside, Julian Reese and Derek Queen. Honestly, I hated to see those two programs in the same pod and in the same region as the hottest team in the country. That's why the West region, for me, is the region of death. Like, that is that's gates of hell. Type of activity there between the coaches, the brands. I mean, you have the back-to-back reigning national champion UConn Huskies there, and that's what Florida has to do in all likelihood to get through to the Sweet 16. Are they better than UConn? Should they beat UConn? On paper, yes. But you and I both know that's not how these games get decided. So I agree. Florida and St. John's will be a dream matchup. You just said it. St. John's trait that makes you trust them in March is that they are elite at settling into a game, and no deficit is insurmountable. 4-0 in games in which they are trailing by 15 or more. 7-1 in games in which they trail by double figures. It is remarkable, and really the reason why is because they have two guards who can break you down defensively with R.J. Lewis and Kadari Richmond. Off the dribble, Zach, they're just tremendous. And Zubi Ejiofor is a Tonka truck inside.
Let me ask you in the coaching cycle right now, right? Villanova, and obviously you get into Indiana, you know, NC State opens up, you know, all that talk about Will Wade as well. But last year, I feel like it went, all right, Danny Hurley staying in college or going to the Lakers. There wasn't really a significant talk. I know, right, Kentucky and stuff was thrown in there for Danny Hurley, but no one thought Danny Hurley was leaving UConn to go to another college job. But the names were, okay, is Scott Drew going to leave Baylor? He didn't. And then it was Dusty May and Pat Kelsey. A year later, Dusty May, Pat Kelsey, they look pretty damn good. When you get into the Villanovas of the world, which is a very good job, when you get into Indiana as well, like, who are the names that you're hearing that could be on the move in this coaching cycle?
Well, Richard Pitino has done a remarkable job at New Mexico, and I think he's going to land a job here, somewhere more east. I think Ryan Odom at VCU is in position to get either Virginia or Villanova. I'd be surprised if he didn't get one of those two jobs. TJ Otzelberger comes up often, but I think he's genuinely happy at Iowa State, and I don't think he'll be on the move. Ben McCollum's done an amazing job at Drake and is going to have the opportunity to get a bigger job, and keep an eye on him for Indiana. We haven't heard much about Buzz Williams yet, but I think that could heat up once A&M is eliminated. Buzz has obviously moved from school to school, sometimes rather quickly, and might be time there, but it also might be time for him to try to find, you know, somewhere else that he wants to go. I will give you a dark horse name, Zach, that I think is interesting here in the coaching carousel, and that is Mick Cronin. I think that there's a world where Mick may still want to come back east or may want to go back towards family, and maybe he goes away from Los Angeles. And it's not anything against UCLA. I just, all those comments that he made this year, the travel situation there, I don't know if that's Mick. You know, in the Big Ten, I just wonder if he ever considers potentially taking a different job and having a change of scenery to get somewhere that's closer to where he's from. You know, he's a Midwest guy. So we'll see what happens. But another guy, Nico Medved at Colorado State. I think Nico Medved is a really good coach who's done a remarkable job there. They have a great first-round matchup. I mean, I'm super intrigued to see what happens when they go up against the Memphis Tigers. I think there's a bunch of upset picks. And
About Chris Collins at Nova? Are you buying that?
You know, I think that – so, Chris, I'm buying that it's being talked about. I'm buying that it's being talked about. I don't know if I'm buying that it's just that it's as far along as people think. You know, it's interesting because Mark Jackson was the athletic director at Villanova, and he goes from Villanova to Northwestern. And he goes from Villanova to Northwestern because I think in essence he doesn't want to be the one to fire the guy he hired, Kyle Neptune, and to take football and to have a Big Ten AD job. But you're still moving your family, heading to Chicago. I think Chris Collins is a good candidate, Zach. And I think Chris Collins is a really good coach. But I'd be surprised if Villanova just looks at Chris Collins and that's the hire and it's done and over with. Because to me, this is a program that won two national championships in the last decade. I feel like that job's still pretty competitive, especially when whoever takes that job, you're the face of the school. You're not battling with football. And oh, by the way, you didn't have to be the guy who replaced the guy. You get to be the guy who replaced the guy who replaced the guy. So that's a better, much better job to have than to be in the Neptune seat. I think Collins is certainly on the radar, but I think it's a fluid situation, and I wouldn't say anything's done yet. I like Chris. I think it's a fine hire if Villanova makes it. But I think they need to be thorough in this search.
He's the great John Fanta. You can catch him all throughout the NCAA tournament. Obviously, check out his stuff, Field of 68. Whenever these tournament games end, the late night recaps, the Field of 68, and watching that stuff late into the night on Twitter, they do a phenomenal job. John, we appreciate it as always. Thank you.
Zach, in other breaking news, I can confirm that John Calipari and Rick Pitino will not be going out to dinner in Providence.
Yeah, little veal parmesan, maybe. The two of them could go be eating or something like that. Johnny, thank you.
Thanks, Zach.
There you go. The great John Fanta joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's take a break. We'll come on back with Onside Offside.